Welcome to this deep dive. Today we're unpacking really one of the most pivotal periods in modern history, and our guide is John Lewis Gaddis's landmark work, The Cold War, A New History.
Yeah, and we're not just, you know, listing dates and events here. We're really getting into the core paradox of the 20th century. I mean, a conflict that lasted almost 50 years.
Defined everything.
Defined global politics, yes. And despite having these absolutely civilization-ending weapons, it somehow stayed.
Well, Gaddis calls it a long peace.
Exactly. That's the huge question Gaddis tackles, isn't it? How did this unbelievably tense global struggle manage to avoid a catastrophic hot war? And maybe even more surprising, how did it end with one side just peacefully dissolving without a final battle? How did we not blow ourselves up?
Well, Gaddis gives us a pretty definitive answer, and it goes way beyond just looking at missile counts or troop movements. He explores how ideology, personality, technology, economics, how all these things interacted. Uh-huh. And these insights are frankly crucial for understanding the geopolitical tensions we still see today. Okay, so before we really dig into how that long peace worked, we should probably talk about the historian himself, John Lewis Gaddis.
Right. He's often called the Dean of Cold War Historians, and for good reason. Pulitzer Prize winner. He's known for taking just massive amounts of information and synthesizing it into history that's both readable and incredibly insightful.
And what's really key about this book specifically came out well after 1991, after the Soviet Union collapsed. That timing meant Gaddis had access that previous historians just dreamed of, right?
That's absolutely crucial. After 91, archives in the Soviet Union, Eastern Europe, China, places that were completely sealed off suddenly opened up. So he could move past just speculating about, say, Soviet intentions. He could look at actual state documents, Politburo minutes, even personal notes from leaders. Real evidence.
And all that new information allowed him to develop what historians call the post-revisionist approach.
Yeah.
Okay, that sounds a bit academic. What does that actually mean for us reading the book?
It basically means he's trying to give us the full complex picture, not just, you know, one side's version of events. Gaddis acknowledges that Stalin's paranoia, his deliberate forcing of totalitarian regimes onto Eastern Europe, that was the primary catalyst. He basically started it. But at the same time, Gaddis looks really critically at the American side, too. The fears, the misperceptions, the policy choices that definitely escalated the arms race and helped solidify that divided world.
So he's saying the initial blame, the spark, lies with the USSR and Stalin. But both sides played a role in making the whole situation so incredibly dangerous for so long.
Precisely. It's a balanced, rigorous take. And he argues the Cold War wasn't just a typical power struggle over territory or resources. Fundamentally, it was a moral contest, a clash between two completely incompatible ideas about how society should work. Democratic capitalism versus totalitarian communism. A battle for the future, really.
And right at the heart of his analysis is that amazing idea you mentioned, the paradox of the long peace. It seems so counterintuitive.
It really is. The paradox is that the sheer, almost unimaginable destructive power of nuclear weapons will paradoxically made a large-scale war between the superpowers almost impossible. It's the whole doctrine of mutually assured destruction, MA. You push the button, you know the other side fires back, and everybody loses. Extinction-level stuff.
So it created this incredibly tense, horrifying stalemate.
Mm.
But it was stable.
Stable in a terrifying way, yes. No leader, no matter how reckless they might seem, could actually guarantee their own survival if they initiated a nuclear war. Gaddis uses this metaphor. The weapons were death boats, obviously, but they also acted as lifeboats for the human species by preventing that ultimate conflict.
Wow. And Gaddis traces this whole story right from the end of World War II, when the U.S.-Soviet alliance just fractured, all the way through to the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991. And he makes it clear this outcome wasn't inevitable. It was driven by human choices, human actions.
Yeah, absolutely. When you look at the very beginning, the shift from wartime allies to bitter enemies happened incredibly fast. Gaddis shows how quickly that fear returned almost the moment WWII ended.
And he puts Stalin right at the center of that initial phase.
He does. Stalin's deep paranoia and his absolute insistence on security, which for someone like him meant total control over neighboring countries, led him to use what were called salami tactics.
Salami tactics. What does that mean?
It means slicing away opposition bit by bit. In places like Poland, Hungary, Czechoslovakia, he would eliminate democratic elements piece by piece until a completely loyal totalitarian regime was installed. This deliberate creeping aggression was what really spooked the West. It directly led to the American responses, the Truman Doctrine, the Marshall Plan, and eventually NATO.
Okay, that sounds exactly like the classic security dilemma we talk about in international relations.
It's a perfect example. The security dilemma is when one country takes actions purely for its own defense, like the US setting up NATO to protect Western Europe. But the other side, in this case the USSR, sees that defensive move as inherently threatening, as aggressive encirclement. So it triggers this action-reaction cycle. The USSR forms the Warsaw Pact in response, which then just confirms the West's initial fears about Soviet intentions.
It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy built on fear and mistrust, and it basically locked in the division of Europe and the world. But while the nuclear standoff kind of froze the military competition, Gaddis argues the real battle, the long-term one, was fought elsewhere.
Exactly. On the economic and ideological fronts. And that's where the fundamental weaknesses of the Soviet system really became clear over time. Gaddis draws this sharp contrast between the Soviet command economy, rigid, centrally planned, top-down, and the Western spontaneity market capitalism, driven by innovation, consumer desires, more bottom-up.
And the Soviet system was laser-focused on heavy industry, military hardware, often completely neglecting the needs of its own people, right?
Totally. It was incredibly inefficient. There was just no incentive to innovate or be efficient. And crucially, it just failed to deliver basic consumer goods. Think about the constant magnetic pull of Western prosperity, blue jeans, rock music, supermarkets full of food. That soft power was constantly chipping away at the legitimacy of the communist regimes. Empty shells are not great propaganda.
That underlying economic rot really sets the scene for one of the most ironic twists. Détente in the 1970s. It was meant to manage the rivalry, make it safer, but Gaddis argues it actually helped undermine the USSR. How?
Well, détente meant more interaction, more communication, and crucially, it led to the Helsinki Accords in 1975.
I mostly remember détente being about arms control treaties like SALT. What was so important about Helsinki?
The Soviets signed onto the Helsinki Accords, maybe thinking it was mostly symbolic, but there was a section, Basket 3, that committed all signatories to respecting basic human rights and allowing a freer flow of information. The Kremlin probably saw it as a minor diplomatic concession, but for them, it turned out to be, well, disastrous.
Why disastrous?
Because it suddenly gave dissident groups inside the Soviet bloc, like Solidarity in Poland or Charter 77 in Czechoslovakia, an internationally recognized standard. They could now point to this document their own government had signed and say, "You're violating these basic rights." It essentially handed them a legal and moral weapon to challenge the regimes.
That's incredible. So a diplomatic agreement, a piece of paper, arguably did more damage to the Soviet system than military pressure.
It really speaks to another key Gaddis theme, the importance of individual agency. He pushes back hard against deterministic views of history. He argues that the specific choices made by key leaders at critical moments were absolutely decisive.
And he zooms in on that final crucial pairing of leaders near the end.
Right. You had Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher on one side, mounting this renewed, forceful ideological challenge, calling the Soviet Union the evil empire. And then importantly, you also had Pope John Paul II, whose moral authority inspired millions, especially in Poland. And finally, Mikhail Gorbachev. When those peaceful revolutions started sweeping Eastern Europe in 1989, Gorbachev faced the choice. Use force to crush them, like his predecessors always had, or let them go. He chose not to use force. That, Gaddis argues, was the decisive moral choice that allowed the long peace to finally triumph over the Cold War structure.
That leads us neatly into some of the big overarching themes Gaddis pulls out. The first one is this idea of the asymmetry of empires. You touched on it with NATO versus the Warsaw Pact.
Yeah, it's a really vital distinction Gaddis makes. He describes the American sphere of influence, NATO, its allies in Asia, as largely an empire by invitation. Countries chose to align with Washington, usually for security, economic benefits, shared values, whatever. This made the Western alliance system fundamentally resilient because it was mostly voluntary, consensual.
Whereas the Soviet sphere, the Warsaw Pact countries, that was completely different.
Totally different. That was an empire by imposition, held together purely by Soviet military power, by coercion, by the threat of force, and by fear. There was no real consent involved.
Which meant it was inherently brittle, right?
Exactly. Gaddis shows the moment Gorbachev signaled that Soviet tanks wouldn't roll in anymore to prop up those regimes. The whole structure just shattered almost overnight. There was no underlying legitimacy holding it together. Once the fear was removed, it collapsed.
Okay, theme number two, technology as a driver of change. We know about nuclear weapons changing the game, but Gaddis also points to other technologies.
Right. Beyond the nukes forcing restraint, he talks about things like mass communications, radio, television, eventually satellites. These technologies made it increasingly difficult for totalitarian regimes to completely wall off their populations from outside information, from images of Western life, from different ideas. You can't jam every signal forever.
So technology helped erode the ideological walls.
Definitely. Which connects directly to the third key theme, the power of information and legitimacy. Gaddis really concludes that in the long run, the free flow of ideas and information proved more powerful than military divisions or secret police.
Exposure to Western culture, Western ideas, Western prosperity. It just gradually wore down the claims of communist superiority and legitimacy.
That's the core argument. Tanks can keep order for a while, censorship can slow things down, but you can't indefinitely defeat the appeal of freedom, or even just the appeal of a better standard of living when people know it exists elsewhere.
Gaddis is great at summing up these huge complex ideas with some really memorable lines. It helps crystallize things.
He really is. He has a knack for that concise insight, this one, which basically frames the whole conflict. The Cold War is best understood as a contest between different visions of what the post-war world should look like.
Yeah, that captures it perfectly. It wasn't just about power politics. It was fundamentally about ideas.
And then there's the line that gets to the heart of that nuclear paradox we discussed. The nuclear revolution made war simultaneously more dangerous and less likely. It's such a chilling but accurate summary of Marty.
And finally, his description of the ending. The Cold War ended not with a bang, but with a whimper. And that may have been the most remarkable thing about it. It really highlights how amazing that peaceful, nonviolent conclusion actually was, given the stakes.
So, okay, let's bring this closer to home. What are the real-world applications? How can Gaddis's analysis help us understand things now? Well, first, his explanation of the security dilemma is incredibly relevant for looking at contemporary geopolitics.
You see it everywhere, don't you? Like U.S. and China in the South China Sea, or Russia and NATO in Eastern Europe. One side makes a move it sees as purely defensive, building up forces or alliances.
And the other side inevitably perceives it as offensive, as threatening, which leads them to respond, which confirms the first side's fears. It's that dangerous spiral. Recognizing that dynamic is maybe the first step to trying to manage tensions and avoid unnecessary escalation.
Gaddis's work also offers some timeless leadership lessons in crisis. You think about Kennedy. During the Cuban Missile Crisis, the accounts show incredible restraint, intense diplomacy, keeping communication lines open, even with Khrushchev, their fiercest enemy, to avoid stumbling into catastrophe.
Absolutely. The importance of not backing your opponent into a corner where they feel they have no choice but to lash out. Mm-hmm. And a third application is using the Soviet experience as a kind of template for analyzing authoritarian systems today.
How so?
Well, the internal decay, Gaddis describes the economic stagnation, the inefficiency, the growing gap between propaganda and reality, the lack of genuine popular legitimacy, the brittleness of an empire held by force. These can be seen as potential vulnerabilities in contemporary authoritarian states, too. They often project an image of monolithic strength, but Gaddis reminds us they can be more fragile internally than they appear.
Okay, final thoughts. What really stood out most for you from revisiting Gaddis?
You know, for me, it was the relentless focus on the human element, the sheer impact of individual personalities, Stalin's paranoia literally shaping the start of the conflict, and then, decades later, Gorbachev's very personal moral decision not to use force, allowing it to end peacefully. It's a powerful reminder that history isn't just driven by big impersonal forces.
Honor.
Individual choices really, really matter.
Yeah, I agree with that. And for me, the biggest takeaway, or maybe the most profound lesson, is the fact that it did end peacefully, against all odds, really.
Yeah.
It shows that even conflicts that seem completely intractable, locked in zero sum, they can be resolved. It takes persistent diplomacy, yeah, but also maybe a willingness from leaders to eventually recognize shared interests like survival and step back from the brink. It feels like a win for human agency somehow.
It does. And maybe Gaddis leaves us with a challenge looking at our world now. What are the biggest vulnerabilities, the biggest structural dangers in today's global system? And perhaps more importantly, whose personal choices, which leaders today will future historians look back on and say, that was the moment things turned. It's a sobering thought.
It really is. A lot to think about there. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acotra Foundation.